At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, I know. I'll use my trusty frying pan as a drying pan.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 95 of Out of the Drying Pan, a Pokemon This Series podcast. Each week, we discuss two episodes in the Pokemon anime, and just whatever else happens to pop into our minds. Just a quick reminder, we are an E for explicit podcast, so listener discretion is advised. And I'm your host, Jacob, and I'm here with my co-host, Austin.
Hello. Were we all alive in 95?
You mean like born?
Yeah, like 1995.
I was born.
Yeah.
Okay, I can never remember how fucking old you are, Jacob.
Just me? Alex, you got her figured out?
Yeah, because she's a year behind me.
I'm okay. Older than you are, so if you were alive, I must have been, or was I?
Yep, I'm here with these two blue hairs here, Austin and another co-host Alex. How you doing,
hey.
Alex?
Hey, good. I'm glad you're back and fucking up the intro and not me.
It's what we do best here. That's just what we do. All right, Alex, how's your week? How you doing?
I've been in a Who's Line mood, and so improvisational comedy, that's what we're trying to do here on this podcast, right? So that's been fun. I love Who's Line.
Which one? Which version you watching? The British, the American?
The American version.
All right. Favorite cast member?
Oh my gosh, that's really difficult. I think Colin is my favorite.
Colin is really good. He's pretty freaking good.
Colin, Wayne, he's really, I'm just impressed with the level of, like, the song talent and everything. Like, they're all good in their own way, but I'm like, dang, they can just make this stuff up off the top of their heads.
What is your favorite skit thing that they do?
Oh my gosh, they're all so good. I like Film, TV, and Song Styles, I think it's called. Props is good. Scenes from a Hat. Those are all good.
Yes.
I have a least favorite.
Which is what? Is it?
When they do the three-headed song.
Oh, the three-headed Broadway star.
I hate that one.
Oh, it's funny. Oh.
Ugh.
I don't like Hoedown. That's not my favorite game.
Oh, yeah, the two.
Sometimes I skip the song one. I mean, I know Wayne and Brad and Chip, they're like really good singers, and sometimes it's really funny, but sometimes I do skip like the duet or like the song ones where Wayne will sing to the person. I like the improv-y ones better.
Yeah, Props is definitely my favorite one. And then I like that one. And then I like the dialogue one that's like stuff you can say to your wife, but not your plumber. Or stuff you can say to your plumber, but not your wife. Or things you can say both to your plumber and your wife.
Like that's probably Scenes from a Hat.
Yeah, that might be that one.
Oh, it's so good. So good. But I was talking with Austin about this because watching a show from the 2000... when this was taped, way different than what you could expect to find on TV now. Some of the stuff that they say on there, I'm like, holy shit. All right,
so Austin. Whose line is it anyway? That's it for you, Alex. You ready for Austin?
Yes.
All right.
Okay, I have discovered another horror show. It's an iconic franchise property that we all know. Can you guess what it is?
Who's Afraid of the Dark?
Wait.
No.
You can't have discovered it if it's something we all know already.
Well, I have discovered it for myself. Rediscovered it.
It's a horror show, TV show.
Yes. Yeah.
American Horror Story.
No, it's Scooby-Doo.
Oh, that's a horror. Oh, I was thinking like scary.
Yeah, I've watched Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated. Some crazy ass shit, you guys. Let me tell you.
Is it the new one? Is that the new one?
No, it's like 10 years old.
What's the Scooby-Doo franchise timeline?
Oh my God. We went over this yesterday. This is too much.
Yes, we did.
Oh, y'all did? It's a lot.
Scooby-Doo, where are you?
Oh, yep. We're going to go through them all.
Okay, no, we're not.
There's 30 movies, over 30 movies. Well, then there's like videos, but there's like all kinds of specials and spinoffs and The Undertaker and Elvira and like great.
The Three Stooges.
Yeah. And what else was there, Austin? There was John Cena was in one of them.
Multiple Batman crossovers.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Courage the Cowardly Dog.
That's right. I forgot about that one. That was one of them.
Well, we all know that Scooby-Doo and the Witch's Ghost is the best movie.
You just like the Hex Girls.
I do like the Hex Girls. It started a whole era and fashion inspiration for me, so, you know.
You know what I want? I want redemption for Scrappy-Doo. Everyone shits all over Scrappy-Doo, and I'm like, they can reinvent him. They can bring him back to the public consciousness if they try.
We can rebuild him.
Stronger. Better.
I kind of sort of agree in the sense of, like, whatever they did to him in the live-action movie was just awful.
And, like, you never see him again after that.
Was that the last time we ever saw him in any media?
I think so.
I thought he died in that.
I watched Mystery Incorporated, but other than that, I'm not a Scooby-Doo lore expert.
I thought he died in that, the end of it.
Did he?
He died?
Yeah, I thought, like, he gets drugged to hell or something because he summoned all those demons.
I did not like those movies, those live-action movies as a kid.
No, they were all right.
Let's see what happens. Does it say his fate?
I don't know. I just feel like the joke's gotten old. Like, everyone shits on Scrappy-Doo. And I start to feel bad for him after a while. I know he's a fictional dog. But still.
But he's not doing anything wrong. He just admires, like, Scooby. That's just his thing, you know? And he wants to be overly involved because he wants to help out as much as possible.
Yeah, I didn't hate Scrappy as a kid.
I don't know if I found him entertaining, but I was like, you know, he's...
Yeah.
It's interesting that there's this other character here.
At best, I was apathetic.
Yeah, I think he helped him solve some mysteries, too. I think he's the reason why they actually catch some of the culprits.
So, I think the live-action movie is what made me hate Scrappy, and according to this Wikipedia tidbit here, James Gunn possibly is the reason why he's the villain, because they needed a villain. It says they did not feel comfortable simply giving the role to an anonymous monster, so they ultimately made Scrappy the villain. Despite previously stating he felt kids didn't care, he later admitted that younger viewers had reacted poorly and didn't realize how popular Scrappy was with 5 and 6-year-olds. Wait, 5 and 6-year-olds were watching this movie? That's not good.
That movie was, like, sexual. It was, like, by Scooby-Doo standards, it was kind of racist.
It was racist. I thought the idea was that was supposed to be, like, the kids who grew up watching Scooby-Doo saw it. Like, okay, I thought that was, like, supposed to be that thing they were going for.
I don't know, but I remember, well, I told you this yesterday, Austin, but I remember watching the Scooby-Doo live-action movie and feeling uncomfortable, like, watching it with, like, a parent, and it's, like, the undertones. It was like, ooh, this makes me feel, like, uncomfortable.
Especially when they switch bodies.
Yeah, perhaps, like, feeling up Daphne, like, on screen.
In front of the mirror.
Oh, my God. Okay.
And then Shaggy.
Yeah. It's too much.
Yeah.
Unlike Mystery Incorporated, which is just enough, I would say. I highly recommend everyone watch it.
Yeah, but you forgot the best one of them all.
The 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo?
No, a pup named Scooby-Doo.
Oh, yeah, a good one.
That was the best one.
That was really good.
Mm-hmm. Because they had a treehouse, and, like, the mystery thing was like a wagon. It was just stupid kid stuff.
Oh, I don't remember that, but that's cute.
Austin, I don't remember, but I feel like we had this conversation about treehouses the other day. Weren't we talking about treehouses?
Yeah, we do not live in a treehouse-friendly area.
I have to amend that because this is very shocking to me. Okay, I don't even know if you can really call this a treehouse. Maybe it was more like a play set area, but I was actually walking in my neighborhood just the other day, and I happened to, like, look over into somebody's yard, which I never really do, but they had a treehouse-adjacent structure in the backyard, and I was like, oh my God, a treehouse, sort of.
Is it, like, one of those ones that you, like, buy at the store?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I need to go back over there and, like, peer into their yard some more to, like, see better, but...
Get some photos. We'll post them on Twitter.
Yeah. It didn't look like it was... It wasn't a freestanding structure. It looked like it was kind of up against a tree. So I was like, is that a treehouse? Am I wrong?
I didn't know a single kid who had a treehouse growing up. Did you guys?
No.
My neighbor had one, but it was, like, part of, like, a swing set that they didn't include the swings with it. It just kind of, like, backed up into a tree. Like, the tree helped support it, but the structure of it, you know what I mean? Like, the integrity was, it would have stood there without the tree.
I don't count that as a real one.
It was made of wood. The trees probably accepted it in the forest.
So maybe this doesn't count as a tree house. Maybe it has to be one of those, like, shoddily constructed, like, up in the tree, boards hanging off, kind of like a tarp over it sort of situation.
Do those exist? Listeners, did you have a treehouse? Let us know. I'm not fascinated.
What was that book about the treehouse? The Magic Treehouse Adventures or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, the time machine.
Good shit.
Yeah.
Those got pretty graphic too, some points.
I remember they went to the Burning of Alexandria library.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
They were at the Civil War too. And
Jesus.
They find out the drummer boy. They befriend a drummer boy, but he gets killed.
Oh my God, I don't remember that. That's so tragic.
I don't think he gets killed in the book, but I think they read about him later on.
Oh, okay.
And he's just like, you know, I don't know what's going on, but I just beat this drum. And like, he, you know, it's just unawareness.
What's so funny is I remember losing interest in those because after a while, they got to be like a little too mystical for their own good. They were like fighting dragons and like monsters and stuff. And I was like, okay, this isn't interesting anymore.
It went from being like teaching you about history to being like just entertainment.
Like they went to Narnia, but like.
I got another one. Do you guys remember the Boxcar Children?
Oh my God. I was literally just thinking that, Jacob. I think you and I had like a psychic connection. Anybody else want to live in a boxcar when you were a kid and like go on adventures in the woods?
You want to talk about a series that goes off the rails, huh? Pun intended. Hey. They go from, like, trying to survive to, like, saving the president in a boxcar.
I didn't remember them saving the president. That's funny.
They go from being, like, boxcar children to, like, Rambo reincarnations at the end there.
It's crazy. Really?
They go off the rails.
I just remember in, like, elementary school, our teacher used to have, like, these structured reading times where we all had to, like, read a paragraph from the Boxcar Children. We would, like, go around the room and we all had to read. And it was really embarrassing because you know how you get when everybody's staring at you and then your tongue feels like it's, like, five times too big for your mouth and then you can't read right? Did that happen to everybody else?
Yeah, yeah. And, like, you couldn't read well and you'd miss, like, you would mispronounce a word and somebody would correct you. And you'd be like,
yes.
Turd.
I know. Or they would like, they would go, hee hee. They would snicker behind your back.
Yeah. You try to sound it out. You'd be like, procrastinate. I got it. You keep reading.
God, yeah. Now I'm having anxiety sweats.
I was the asshole kid who was screaming at you.
Oh, it was you.
And you would be.
Probably, I'm sure.
You gave some kid a complex for their life, Austin. I hope you're happy.
Lord knows how many people I've sent to therapy.
What's your body count? Eight people.
I got stories. Okay.
Okay.
I'm trying to be better.
We all are. That's all you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, okay. I'll say that. That's one thing I'm trying to get better about, saying like offensive words. Because like Alex was talking about Whose Line Is It Anyway? And like, shit from the 2000s is homophobic and queerphobic as shit.
Oh, I couldn't believe how many. I was telling Austin, I was like, the amount of gay jokes, LGBTQ, like, they just, it's all the time. And it's like, I know at the time that was like the funny thing, I suppose, but
it was very trendy.
It
caused a lot of people to have very negative things happen in their lives as part of a larger culture.
The amount of times they're like trying to, like, well, they kiss each other on the show, that they make those jokes on the show, I was like, I just couldn't believe it. It's very different. And it kind of kicked off a conversation between the two of us. It was like, we should be more mindful of the things that just slip out in everyday life, like certain words or whatever.
I'm trying to avoid using the words we like, stupid, idiot. I know moron has a racist history. I know that for sure. Like, all those kind of stuff. I'm trying to get away from it. It may take a while, but I'm trying.
So we just need to scrap the dictionary and restart.
That's the problem with the English language is we don't have good insulting words that aren't, like, actually
bad.
Offensive in some way.
That's the point of them, though, you know?
I know, but that's the problem.
Every insulting word, like, even if you made one up, you know, it would be tied to something.
See, this is why I like the word fuck so much. Fuck is a strong word, but not really, because it's not actually, it has no real negative connotation.
It actually does.
Well, what does it mean?
It's offensive to sex workers.
Oh, God damn it.
Yeah, it was under the consent of the king. If you were approved for, like, sex work or something like that, you know, it's mainly offensive to, like, it means what it means. Like, when we say it, it's, like, towards prostitutes, and a teacher told us that. And I was in, like, high school.
It's just, but it's too good of a word. You can use it in any context, any situation. It's a verb, it's a noun, it's an adjective,
it means everything.
Yeah, it's just one of those filler words. It's new, it's a sentence enhancer.
We just need dolphin noises to come out every time we try to cuss, or animal noises. That would solve all the problems. There'd be no issues ever. All right, so what have we done? We talked about Whose Line, Scooby-Doo, Boxcar Children.
Jacob, how's your week?
I'll start off with the media. What I've been soaking in as a sponge is, like, Alex, you've inspired me to listen to, like, these murder mystery podcast things, because I heard you mention them before.
Murder porn?
Yeah, I was sick of listening to, like, I needed a story. I've listened to Root of Evil. Have you heard of that one?
Oh, I've heard. Wait, remind me of the premise, because I probably have watched it.
It's about the Black Dahlia and, like, the guy who, they never proved it, but the guy who probably killed her and how just messed up he was and how messed up he made this family. And they kind of go through and they kind of put the pieces together of why they think he murdered her. It's really dark. This is an E for Explicit podcast. If there was one above E, it would be that one. The stuff they talk about, it's just, ugh, man. And then now I'm listening to one called Bear Brook, which is about the chameleon serial killer in New Hampshire.
I've not heard of that.
Yeah, it's pretty random. He used to just dump dead bodies in this national park, but there was only one police officer ever on duty, and it's like 20 square miles, so they wouldn't ever find him until way later. But I just started that one, so I'm going back to like old school, where like used to listen to the radio for entertainment. You didn't watch anything.
Just like ours.
Yeah, just like ours.
Podcast.
Yeah, where we describe things the best we can.
Should we do that at some point? Should we become a true crime podcast and be like, Misty was a beautiful redhead girl who lit up the room when she walked in, and then they found her body in the safari zone.
Do all podcasts eventually devolve into murder mystery podcasts?
We'll find out.
Well, that actually transitions me into my next thing I did yesterday, because I went four-wheeling in, like, the very deep woods.
Where?
Very deep woods.
Yeah, and, like, you won't believe, like, what we found.
Body.
No. I was going towards that. We didn't. Yeah, I went four-wheeling yesterday in the backwoods. I got back to my country roots. Oh, my God. You tell you what? The amount of daddy long legs I had on me, it was just incredible.
Ew, and, on you. Oh, my God.
And the ticks, too.
I'd rather have that than, like, a brown recluse or a black
widow. Yeah, yeah. Those don't hurt you, I don't think. Like, the granddaddy long legs, they don't do anything to you.
Oh, yeah. I thought you meant recluse. Ticks. I was like, yeah, they fucking do.
Jacob, oh, my God. Lyme disease is horrible.
We're okay. That was really fun. Get out in nature. That was about it. Went back to our country roads. We listened to John Denver Country Roads the whole time. Ah. Of course. Had that blasting off the ATV.
Should've done Little Nas X.
Yes. That involves the city, though. We didn't get into the city part of it.
Okay.
We didn't take our vehicles into our horses into the city to race. We did race out there, though, to see like what was faster, the ATV and the four-wheeler. And that really turned into a duel, kind of like our first Pokemon episode for the day. Totodile Duel! And the other episode we're talking about today is hot matches, because it was hot yesterday, too, when we're outside. So it all comes full circle. So I guess we can get on with the main reason we record, even though I didn't really feel like that lately, is the Pokemon episodes. This has turned into more of a nostalgia cast, right?
It's always been a nostalgia cast. Jacob, when you weren't recording with us last week, we skipped over week talk. We were done like 2 minutes. We were like, we don't need to talk for 30 minutes about nothing.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm good with whatever. We can do that too if we want to.
No. It's fine. I just thought it was funny.
All right, Austin, 30-second summary challenge. Me, Totodile Duel. Alex, hot matches. All right, Austin, are you ready?
Always.
Let me get to a round number. Always ready. I like it. Alrighty, in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Very lonely but happy, Totodile finds the twerps and decides to battle them. And so both Misty and Ash try to catch it, even though I think Misty should have caught it. And they throw their lure balls, and they don't know which lure ball hits the Totodile. So they have a battle, Ash versus Misty. And Misty kind of loses pathetically, but her Poliwag evolves into a Poliwhirl. She's happy that she got a new Poliwhirl, and Ash got a new Totodile, and Totodile does some dancing.
Time. Very good. I will say this episode does, when we get to a point, it does question Pokeball mechanics again.
Yep.
There's probably going to be a big discussion on that. That's currently going to take up the majority of what we talk about this episode. Just a little bit of a forewarning there. But Austin didn't cover this in his summary, but we do start this episode fishing. I don't know if we've ever seen the Twerps fish before. Yeah, we have. We have. We have seen them fish before.
As a big group like that?
Yeah, we have. I want to say we have.
Yes.
Okay. They're in no hurry to get anywhere, are they?
No. I think we're fishing for food. Food?
Well, they're fishing to catch Pokemon.
Catch Pokemon. Okay. They complain about their being hungry, too. That's the reason why. But anyway, this is where Misty... They're not catching anything, of course, because they're not using the right lures. And that's when Misty pulls out this, like, lure that's just like a wooden doll of her. And she says this is a new lure, but we've seen this before.
I think we saw it in the Safari Zone episode.
So was that the...
Is that right?
Was that the band episode that they had it?
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe that's the reason why they said it was new.
This one had a cape. Did it have a cape before?
I have no idea.
A super Misty.
Yeah.
I think the Misty lore looks different every time we see it, but I could be wrong.
Maybe that's what she means. It's a new Misty lore. Like, it's just like she changed something of it. Like, the color's different, more vibrant.
I don't know enough to dispute it, so...
How is she creating these? What materials is she using?
It's wooden, I assume.
I mean, we know from the last episode that at least one of them, Brock, has whittling talent. So maybe...
Yes, he does.
He makes the lures and maybe he taught her how? I don't know. Or no, did she already have the lure from the time before she met... Maybe Misty taught Brock.
Yes.
I like that better.
Jacob, you missed some heated discussion about us talking shit about Brock and his...
Wooden sausage... Bullshit.
Nonsensical plans.
Wooden sausage.
That's not a euphemism.
Is he gonna make him eat wood?
Yes.
So they were starving enough that he was gonna carve wood to make it look like sausage and just have him eat it.
You're gonna have to go back to episode 94, find out more about that. Give me some more downloads.
Alrighty. Okay. You have my curiosity. Anyway, this lore works because Misty gets a bite and she's yanking on it for, I don't know, about a couple minutes, and unfortunately, she has like an Animal Crossing moment where you think you got a huge fish, and it just turns out to be a boot. But in this case, it is it's an old kettle. It's an old rusty-looking kettle. Not really sure how that got there, but for some reason, Brock also says he wants to use it, because he's sick of making tea. He's sick of coffee, and he wants tea.
I know how it got there.
How did it get there?
It's from all those damn people polluting up the river in Quagsire Town, throwing their garbage downriver.
That's true, yeah. That still isn't as bad as where we went with the muck and how they were just throwing the sludge in the water and just letting it run off. They didn't care about it at all.
Oh, in Grinchy City. Grinchy. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That one was pretty gross.
Good memory, Austin.
But I don't know. I'm more of a coffee guy, too, so I can see the point there. But this is where we meet our main Pokemon for the episode. And the best starter of the Johto region.
He's very charismatic in this episode.
When they pull him out of the water after the second bite, he's very energetic, is what I would say. He's like, I try to compare him to like a cartoon character from like Looney Tunes. He's kind of like Wile E. Coyote's, who's he trying to catch?
I think of Woody Woodpecker.
Woody Woodpecker's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah, not a Looney Tune, but still.
Yeah, something like that. Like, Woody Woodpecker's, that's perfect. That's a perfect comparison, because he even makes the noise. He sounds kind of similar to him, that, like, rah, noise.
That Daffy Duck noise that
yeah,
he makes.
Yeah.
All right, let's all try and do a Totodile voice.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Lord.
I can't do it. Nope.
Good try.
Let's just leave it at that, Alex. That was good enough.
I don't even want to... I can hear it in my head, but I don't think I can vocalize it. Jacob, try it. Just try it.
Oh my God, I can't even remember.
Oh my God, I want my throat to make the noise, but I feel like I can't get it to do it.
That little...
No, I can't even
do it. That was not bad.
Do it again, do it again.
That was actually pretty good. No, for real, that was not bad.
At all.
I liked it, do it anyway.
Yeah.
Oh my God, okay.
That's good.
Oh, I sound like a gremlin. Oh God. All right.
That was good. That was probably the closest to it.
You know, this kind of thing makes me really have a newfound appreciation for voice actors.
I was just about to say that.
I wish I could do like the amount of the talent that goes into making some of these noises. Oh man. Hats off to you, Totodile voice actor, actress.
Casey Rogers.
Oh, well, that's good.
Very impressive.
I know Casey Rogers also did Wobba Fett.
Oh, I can hear it.
Yeah, that's the similar raspiness in the voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that does make you respect them. Like, I used to think that would be the easy part of Pokemon, is just saying the Pokemon's name. But then you get into some of these.
Now that's an easy one.
Well, that one's an easy one because we know the story. And that was just like, oh, hey, we need somebody to do that voiceover clip real quick. And then some random...
Michael Haggerty.
Yeah, went in there and did it.
Who has his own Pokemon podcast, by the way.
Oh, okay, cool. Maybe we can collab with him.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right. All right.
So Totodile jumps out, and that was a good impersonations there. But this sparks a rivalry, or a duel, which we get the episode from, of Ash and Misty trying to catch it. Basically, Ash uses Pikachu to try to catch it. Misty tries to catch it with, like, a fishing lure.
Sorry, I have one observation. Did anybody else realize, maybe it was just my streaming, like, where I was streaming it at, but the lip flaps were way off this episode. Was that the case?
Not for me. I was watching the DVD. It was fine.
Okay.
I didn't get too much.
Huh. All right. Maybe that was, like I said, maybe it was the streaming platform I was listening to it on, but it was really weird, and the audio was off in some places, so I was like, is that an error? But apparently not.
That's a streaming video error.
Yeah. Apparently. It was very distracting.
Sometimes it does that to me, too, where, like, it's delayed in some way, where, like, the voices flap, and then it comes in a little bit later.
Yes.
I can't handle that shit. I can't do it.
I hate it. I hate it, too. But
it gives me the heebie-jeebies.
I just gotta watch it, because we gotta do this, so...
Or you could use the official sources like Austin does.
But that then would money. Cost money. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Get it off Hulu, right?
Right.
I think it's on Amazon, but you got to pay for it, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, that's not where I watched it, but anyway.
Fuck Amazon. Okay.
All right. I don't know who, I don't even know who owns it anymore. I know it comes on Disney, or used to, but...
No, it doesn't.
Now it doesn't. See, there you go.
Is it airing anywhere in the United States? Maybe like on Boomerang or some shit. I don't know.
No, it's not on Boomerang. It's not old enough yet.
It used to be.
Oh, I stand corrected then. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what you get.
Okay. We watch it. Like I said, this just sparks a duel between Ash and Misty, and they can't catch it.
I was on Misty's side.
Yes.
She was the one fishing. She fished up Totodile. She had just gone on and on about how she wanted a new water-type Pokemon and how much it meant to her.
Ash was fucking rude. He was a bad friend in this episode.
Ash was complaining about the fishing and how boring it was, which, like, agreed, but still.
Yeah, this is, like, a weird spin from, like, early Pokemon when it was, like, supporting catching Pokemon where they would help each other. We're competing against each other now. There's no longer that, like, support. It's more of, like, a greedy take on it.
This reminded me of... our early episodes where we would have this commentary on the gender roles and the dynamics between them and like how they treated each other. And I kind of got that vibe again because there was one part where they're having this like argument about who should catch it. And Ash is extremely rude. And I'm with you, Austin, on Misty's side 100%. And then they get into this whole argument, fight about it. Totodile runs off, but she then asks him for permission. She's like, Ash, can I please catch it? Will you please let me catch it? And I'm like, girl, why do you need his permission? You don't need his permission. And it riled me up a little.
And Ash was his little asshole self this episode,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Sassy
he was Ash. Straight back to season one.
Yep.
I don't think he even wants it until he realizes Misty wants it. That little kid, snobby kid thing.
I wish he had just said, I want the Totodile because I want the complete set of starters.
Yeah.
Would that have been better? I feel like the way he treated her still, like, he's already got two of the three.
It would not have been better, but I think it would have been funny.
The reasoning would have been better. Hmm. Anyway, they don't catch it, and a Totodile escapes, and he just kind of swims downstream. Do we come across Team Rocket? And guess what? They're all hungry, as usual. All our characters are just hungry all the time. This is miserable. To be trekking the woods and venturing like this. And they also mentioned, I think, Giovanni's cut them off, too. So their black card doesn't work anymore.
I miss that black card. That was so funny.
Yeah. What are you going to do with Team Rocket if they can't afford, like, all their contraptions and all their little knickknacks?
Remember the time Meowth was, like, hawking stuff on the street?
That's what they should
do. And Jesse and James were, like, we're working at, like, McDonald's or something.
That's what we need. We need them, like, doing just odd jobs the whole time instead of sitting there just starving. They're starving to death. Totodile sees them, and this is kind of, like, just Totodile's personality. He just kind of goes up to them and just starts dancing with them and starts just dancing around them, and he's just really kind of energetic and having fun with it. This is like the most relaxed Pokemon we've come across in a while. Like, it's just happy. It's content with its life. There's nothing wrong with it.
I mean, of all the starters, I think, or of the Johto starters, I should say, I think it has the best personality.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like, you gotta, we'll classify them. Like, Chikorita's weird. Like, really
obsessive.
Weird. Yeah, obsessive. Chikorita's really weird. Cyndaquil.
Lethargic.
It's lethargic, but it's kind of like the underdog story every time it battles, because it always gets beat pretty bad, and then it kind of comes from behind once it gets its flame started. And then out of left field comes Totodile, and there's not really a story here. It's just happy-go-lucky.
Fun.
Yeah, nothing's wrong with it. I mean, I like it. If they were all three like this, it'd probably be too much, but this is the best one.
Yeah, it was refreshing for this episode to be about Ash and Misty and not about, like, we gotta save Totodile from whatever predicament it's in. It was a bit different than the other two. I liked it.
Yeah, this is actually, we're catching a Pokemon here. We're not, like, trying to make it love us by helping it.
It already loves them. It like, sees them and is like, I want to join people.
Yeah.
I'm alone. I want to go somewhere. Let's go.
Yeah, all this pollution in the waters killed my family. I just want to go, you know, join the trainers here. Yeah, I get it. I get you, Totodile. See, Totodile is, like, he's still so innocent. Like, he even gets angry at Team Rocket a little bit. They kind of snarl, getting a little snarl here with Totodile, and it's just still laughy, kind of go lucky, and they keep messing with it. And Wobbuffet comes out and tries to mess with it, and then Totodile just says, enough's enough, and he water guns them off into an oblivion. But he does it with, like, just happy go lucky face, you know. It's just
panache.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. It's just, I don't know, there's not like a real serious moment there, just like, I'm sick of you, so I'm gonna blast you off. And so that's basically what's been just happening so far. But this is where things get a little dicey here. So Ash and, you know, the Torps, we're still looking for Totodile. And then we come across it again, of course, because it's kind of following us, but it's staying just a little bit away. It's playing hard to catch. And then we get the idea to use our lure balls that, what's his name gave us? Gus gave us?
Kurt.
Gus?
Yeah. Gus or Kurt.
Where did you get these names from?
I don't know. I'm just trying to say a name to fill it, because I'm not, like, I'm going to be sitting here, like, in silence thinking of the name for 5 minutes, so I just throw a name out there, and as always, Austin corrects me. So it's Kurt, not mm-hmm. Gus.
Yep, it's like we're reading the Boxcar Children, and right. I'm here to correct your grammar,
next,
or whatever.
Next Totodile's going to save the president. That's right, yeah.
I'm going to have to go back and do research on that, because I feel like I need to know if they actually did save the president.
I don't know. They get pretty weird, though. That could be our first Patreon episode. We'll look up obscure Boxcar Children
books.
We'll
read Boxcar Children episodes to you.
This has got me... I'm just going to... Weirdest Boxcar...
Oh, God. Here we
children.
Go. Ooh, we could do a dramatic reading like we did in My Immortal, except for Boxcar Children. That'd be fun.
Let's read Boxcar Children fan fiction.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, God. I'm sure they all like have sex with each other. Ew.
Oh, stop.
There's the Boxcar Children and the Trouble on the Wild West Express.
Ooh.
Oh, man. Oh, there's a lot of, like, weird ones. The Secret of Bigfoot Valley. The Gathering of the Bones.
I want to read that. Okay, are you trying to make a case against this? Because you're selling this to me. You're not discouraging me.
I'm not trying to discourage anybody. I'm just saying, it, like, we go from trying to survive to, like, saving the planet and killing vampires. It's just, okay. You know what I mean? It just goes off... Like, it really goes off the rails. It's like they just, the first three sold so well, and they're like, just keep pumping them out. I don't think they're even the Boxcar Children after a while. I think they all just get replaced. It's just the title.
Oh, man. I love late 90s, early 2000s, young adult, like, or kids books. Just great. I'm thinking of Animorphs all of a sudden. Fucking love it.
Also not young adult.
Is it not? Don't they get kind of, like, kind of intense towards the end?
Yeah, but it's not young adult.
I don't know literature. Okay, maybe I was wrong to say that.
Here I am to correct you once again.
Please do.
I'm that kid.
I'm willing to admit if I've made a mistake. What is it? What genre? Or what audience?
What, Animorphs?
Children.
Yeah.
Is that the target audience?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Okay. The Boxcar Children and Animorphs had a crossover book.
Are you serious?
No, I'm not serious.
No, they did not.
No.
Oh, Jacob. Austin was so excited. Did you see that? He, like, that jumped out of his chair.
That was awesome. I would have loved that.
Holy shit. I almost believed you for half a second.
That's what we need. The story we never got.
Throw a little magic treehouse in there. We're good.
Mm-hmm.
For the record, the first Boxcar Children book came out in 1924.
Oh my God.
What'd I say? Late 90s, early 2000s?
No, but they had a revival at various points, including the 90s.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I think that's what we're talking
about.
That's what we've got to be talking about.
Oh, it's still going to this day. Okay.
That's when Van Helsing and, like, saving the president and Bigfoot come into play. Okay.
Yeah.
And the Animorphs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, isn't Van Helsing? There's a Scooby-Doo with Van Helsing in it, I'm pretty sure.
I'm sure there is.
Yeah. All right, anyway, we've derailed.
All the stores are very luring to people, and that reminds me of the lure ball. Okay, this is where we're going to talk about Pokemon mechanics here. Okay,
yes,
so
yes,
Ash
we do.
And Misty come across Totodile. They remember their lure balls they got from Kurt, a.k.a. Gus. They throw them into the grass. Like, I don't even know how this is like a perfect throw. They don't even see Totodile. They just throw it in the grass, and then they catch them. But they don't know whose ball caught them. It was, like, kind of hidden. We don't know how you get ownership of a Pokemon. Because after this, they have to, like, duel. Yes, Alex?
One observation, because Pokeball mechanics. Hoo-hoo. Misty says, okay, I was thinking of you guys in the episode, the Apricorn Ball disaster episode that we had. And we were reading about the game mechanics and all that. So Misty pops out and she's like, here's my lure ball and I'm going to use this. It's my big idea. And she's like, Kurt says it's the best way to catch water Pokemon, but they aren't fishing. They are not fishing. So wouldn't that mean that the lure ball is just as effective as a regular Pokeball in this situation?
I'd like to think that the lure ball was like, okay, they caught Totodile fishing, so I'll be more effective now. But when Totodile later appears to them without them having fished it out, it's like, okay, now I'm not going to be more effective because y'all fucked up your chance the first time.
Right?
The lure ball knows.
It has to be in water?
It has to be...
fishing.
Fishing, yes.
Oh, so this is nonsense. Then this doesn't make sense at all.
So the Pokeball that Misty throws at first doesn't catch it. Or no, who throws it first? Was it Ash?
Ash. But that was a regular Pokeball, wasn't it?
Yes, and it doesn't work. It pops out. But the second time when they use a lure ball, it catches it first throw.
Yeah.
And then they weren't fishing.
Maybe it's weakened. Because it's like, it used that big water gun to blast off Team Rocket. It danced for like 10 minutes. Maybe it's just tired. Maybe that's the reason why. I don't know.
And so, to your point, Jacob, about it being caught in the bush and like nobody saw whose ball caught what, you know, whatever. Ash has a Pokédex. Obviously, it was ultimately his ball that caught it. But it doesn't register to the... Like, why is that not a feature? I mean, they do that in later episodes, though, with, like, Go and they catch a Pokemon. It's like, blah, blah, blah has been registered to your Pokedex.
I thought also, like, to call the Pokemon out, you had to be the owner. So wouldn't they just, like, Ash grab it and be like, go, Totodile. And if it doesn't come out, then it's Misty's. Isn't that a thing, too? Couldn't they just done that?
I feel like all they have to do is, like, put their hands up and be like, I'm here, lure ball. And it would go to whoever it belongs to.
That'd be cool, too.
But the interesting thing is there's no registration tied to it. There's nothing because, I mean, I know I'm kind of jumping ahead a little bit. Sorry, Jacob. But Brock steps in. He's like, fuck this shit. You guys can't, you know, solve this in a mature way. So whoever wins this battle becomes the owner. It doesn't matter. Whoever's going to win this battle wins the ownership rights.
I know who to blame. I know who to blame, and it's Gus, because his Pokeballs do not work like normal Pokeballs, like the mass-produced ones.
Oh, so this is the result of using a knockoff Pokeball. That's the problem we talked about earlier in our podcast. If you use that knockoff garbage, it doesn't work.
It doesn't have all the features.
That is a good... Okay, I'm going to choose to subscribe to that thinking because it doesn't have the same digital fingerprint registration type of thing that a normal Pokeball would have.
Yeah, it's sort of like your friends get like the Razor scooter with the Sparker on the back and you can pop wheelies with it. And then you get a Freddy scooter and it's not as good and the wheels are made of like some kind of like cheap polyurethane that they crack every time you hit a pebble.
Do y'all have Razor scooters?
Yes.
I had a Freddy's.
Razor brand?
No. Yes. I had a cheap Freddy's scooter. It had a wider frame on the bottom of it, like to help with balance, but it broke pretty quick. It was like, it rusted. It wasn't stainless steel like a Razor, so it would rust pretty easy.
Those things would beat the shit out of your shin.
Oh, man. It was horrible. Ugh.
Those didn't catch on for that long, really. They had one video game, and that was it. It wasn't like Tony Hawk skateboarding. All the cool kids with their Razor scooter.
I had a red one.
You had a red one? Oh, my God.
I had a blue one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Blue, like Totodile. And who does Totodile belong to? We don't know. Like, we just talked about, there's just no... Who has ownership? We can't decide. So we got to battle it out. This is Ash versus Misty. How many times have they battled? Is this the first time since, I guess, the gym, since the Cerulean gym, that we've really seen them battle, or they've done it before?
Who gets to keep Togepi?
Oh, okay. Oh, okay.
It was Psyduck versus Bulbasaur.
And this was Ash versus Misty that time, too. This is like their thing, then. I guess they battle over Pokemon. I forgot about that. So the battle basically starts out with, of course, Ash sends out Pikachu. And Misty sends out a surprise contender here.
This was so good.
Togepi. And this isn't like, this doesn't go the way you think it is. I mean, like, Togepi is a pretty powerful Pokemon. We know it has Metronome and it does these crazy things. But this is just more of like, Pikachu can't find himself in himself to hit Togepi. Like, it's too cute and it's too friendly. He just is like, I feel sad for this thing. I would crack its egg. I can't do this.
This was a brilliant tactical move on Misty's part. I was so proud of her in that moment. I'm like, based on the way he was treating her, I'm like, you go, girl. She's like, I'm going to use Togepi because I know Pikachu will not hit Togepi.
That was so fucking smart.
It was.
Psychological warfare going on there from Misty. Genius. It's a great tactic because it works. I mean, basically, Togepi goes out there and Pikachu just gets off the battlefield and says, I can't.
Also, the first time Misty has commanded Togepi to use an attack.
Oh, yeah. Charm. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Huh. And it does it, too.
Yeah. Charms Pikachu off the battlefield. Next, we get Austin's favorite Pokemon, Staryu.
Is it my favorite Pokemon?
Yeah, it's your favorite Pokemon. Staryu comes out to play.
Star-me. I made fun of Star-me all the time.
Nope, Staryu.
Oh.
That's what we're doing here. This is your favorite. And it battles our clingy Chikorita.
I actually did not want her to use Staryu because I was like, this is Goldeen's time to shine. They're next to a river. Use Goldeen.
But no.
Nope.
She could have had the advantage. She could have had Goldeen go in the river and do like sneak attacks and all kinds of stuff.
That would have been an endless battle though, because Goldeen goes in the water. Chikorita just stands on the shore.
Scoop it out with Vine Whip and just beat the shit out of it on a rock.
Throw it on. All I can do is throw it on land. Throw it on land and it's going to suffocate. So there you go. Yeah, just do that. I can't remember who wins this one. I think Chikorita wins, right?
Misty, that was such a poor showing for Staryu. I felt so bad for it. I feel like it has all this potential. Misty was just like, use tackle attack. Oh, dang, I lost.
That's it, yeah. But then Poliwag comes out from Misty's side and beats Chikorita, I guess. Or is it like it's a one-on-one battle thing. So I think
it's one-on-one.
Yeah, they call back. Poliwag gets sent out and then Ash goes with another grass type against the water type. Bulbasaur comes out to play. And at first, it kind of looks like Poliwag's doing its thing, blasting Bulbasaur around, kind of sticking it to it. But then Ash orders it to do Solar Beam. And this is, Bulbasaur has a lot of resolve here because it's getting whacked back and forth. And it's withstanding, sorry, my phone went off there, withstanding Poliwag's attack. But it's not enough. And Bulbasaur gets its Solar Beam off just in time to blast Poliwag and knock it out.
You forgot a critical part.
I was about to get there, but not without Poliwag evolving to Poliwhirl.
He's here.
Poliwhirl.
Poliwhirl.
I posted something in the chat.
Yeah, I see it. Cute. Is that an actual cover from Time Magazine?
Yes, the cover of Time Magazine with Poliwhirl front and center, highlighted for all to see.
Oh my God. Do you read the title here? For many kids, it's now an addiction. Cards, video games, toys, a new movie? Is it bad for them?
Oh my, so fear-mongering. For no reason.
But also, the little upper corner insert thing says, paying less for prescriptions.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
That's a lie.
I want to talk about Poliwhirl.
All right, bring it on. What about Poliwhirl?
All right, I'm sending you a series of images, actually. Back in the day, back in the 90s, clearly, Poliwhirl was considered to be an up-and-comer.
Look at it. Oh my God, this is a Kellogg's Pokemon cereal. Oh,
I love the way it's written, too. Like the holographic style.
This is such a weird lineup of Pokemon on the cover here of the box.
Right.
It's Articuno.
But that's an especially weird one.
You have an Oddish.
Hold on.
Togepi.
Ditto.
Ditto. Articuno. Look, Articuno's kind of weird looking in this one.
Yeah, what's going on with its beak?
Yeah, and its eyes.
Ugh. Limited edition.
Oh, yeah, I remember those.
The kids' WB, like, gold-plated things in the Pokeball.
That was from Burger King, right?
Yeah, Burger King, that's it.
What is and this?
Here's another ad, right, which is like introducing the content of Pokemon. There's a big lineup, Poliwhirls included.
This is just a big nostalgia blast here.
Gotcha. Why, it's like a big net catching them. Gotcha. What is this for?
That's like a magazine ad promoting the concept of Pokemon, which is a brand new concept at the time.
Oh, okay.
Poliwhirl is very prominent in all these major scale promotions. Because clearly, at the time, they considered Poliwhirl to be very marketable. It must have been, like, in all the style guides. Like, Poliwhirl was a prominent player at the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is so strange to me, because we don't think of Poliwhirl as, like, big-name Pokemon. But at the time, clearly they were trying to make it be so. But it's never really had a big appearance in the anime, you know?
Not really.
So it's funny that now, here we are, end of season 3... And Poliwhirl joins the main cast. And I just find it amusing.
Yeah, what's also weird about this gacha ad too, look at the three main starters from the original game. Look what's unique about them.
Oh, Charizard and Blastoise and Bulbasaur.
Yeah, it's not Venusaur. It's they kept the first evolution. That's weird.
Interesting.
Apparently, conversely, Venusaur I don't think was considered to be very marketable as opposed to, well, you had red and blue versions, which in America, and Venusaur, that was the mascot for green, but that never came over here in that sense, so it wasn't as marketable as those other two.
I don't know. I just find Poliwhirl's forgotten legacy as promotional tool to be interesting. Sorry, it wasn't very good podcasting, but I just had to point it out.
Oh, Poliwhirl is an interesting choice just because, like, design-wise, it doesn't fit in with, like, you know, the cliche of, like, Bulbasaur, Pikachu, Charmander, you know, that kind of, it's just a round thing with a big swirly mouth, but it's not really a mouth, is it? It's like a, does Poliwhirl have a mouth?
Oh shit, does it?
Because Poliwag has the pink mouth.
Does it shoot the water from like its colon area?
Oh my god.
But that's what the black line is, it's shit.
Well, that's supposed to be its intestine.
Exactly.
Oh my god.
I think it shoots the water from like the middle of its belly area.
Does it? Or does it shoot it? Because the bubble, when she does bubble attack, bubble comes out of its hands.
It's got gills somewhere, right? It's probably like,
I guess, like a
sponge. What do they call that? Filter feeding?
Ew, there's a, okay, on Bulbapedia. Bulbapedia.
Oh god.
Oh, sorry. Here we go. Yep. Here we go.
There's a photograph of the internal workings of a Poliwhirl, part of its internal anatomy as seen in its conceptual art. It's on like one half of it. It's like skeletal.
Okay.
Does it say if it has a mouth? Poliwrath has a mouth. Or does it? Or doesn't it?
No.
No. Politoed has a mouth.
Poliwrath is just Poliwhirl Road Rage. Roid Rage.
Roid Rage.
Road Rage.
That could cause it too. That could make it get up there.
It says, while it will leave the water to capture bug Pokemon, it will return and consume them underwater in safety. But how? Oh my god, the mystery.
It doesn't matter anyway, because Misty trades it the next episode.
Oh, look. Oh, I'm sorry, Austin. To your point. Sorry, Jacob, real quick. This logo.
Oh, cute. Which Pokemon Center is that?
Poliwhirl in the original Tokyo Pokemon Center logo. So why is Poliwhirl so prominent? Isn't that interesting?
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
Squirtle's gone. It, like, took the place of Squirtle.
Oh, it was replaced by Piplup in July 2007.
Poor Poliwhirl.
Yep.
Never got to be a big star.
They tried.
Now they have, at the Tokyo one, they have the Mega Evolution of Charizard.
Of course.
Jacob's been there.
Mm-hmm. I have pictures of it. I'll move on. Cool for Poliwhirl. Cool for Misty, but it doesn't matter because Ash has been the victor here and Totodile is now his Pokemon.
I'm sorry. Can I just point out one other thing and then we can move on from this? I think it's bullshit. Bullshit. Misty did not have Poliwhirl avoid. Solar Beam was like charging up. Could have easily Poliwhirl jump out of the way or something. Anything. Do something. But she just has it stand there and get Solar Beamed right in the face. She could have won. She could have won.
She didn't win a single battle.
Horrible. No, she won Togepi. Well,
Togepi.
I'm not including Togepi because Pikachu forfeited.
Yeah. That's horrible. Absolutely terrible showing.
Like I said, it's weird how this has come about. Like, there probably was a different way to solve this, but I don't know. I guess it fits the title of the episode, so good for them. They battle. And now Ash has all three of the Johto starters, thanks to Gus and his lore ball.
Thanks, Gus.
All right, so we move on to our MVP, our most valuable player, our least valuable player, and our quote for this episode?
Yes, this episode is very long.
All righty, we'll come through it quick. All right, it's me followed by Alex and then Austin. Let me see here. My MVP, I'll give it to Totodile. I'm just going to be still the easy one here, because an energetic, upbeat starter, that's cool. There's nothing wrong with him. He's content with life. Just out there having a good time. Good for you. My LVP, I'm going to give it to Boba Fett for just being kind of useless and getting blasted off pretty quickly. And then I can't remember my quote. It's from Brock, but someone help me out with the quote. I forgot it.
You
I didn't
got
write it.
It
down.
Let me see what I got. Let me see what I got.
I've got two.
I got a Brock quote.
Go for it.
That's what it is. Yeah, Brock, when they catch the kettle, Brock goes, "Could you throw it back and try for a coffee maker?" Good for you. That's it for me. Alex, take it away.
Oh, boy. All right, MVP, I am going to give it to Poliwhirl. Why not? Super cute. And the mystery of where's its mouth will probably keep me up at night. LVP, I am going to give it to... I'm going to give it to Misty because I think she could have done way better. I don't know what happened, but the fire was not there. You know, she was so gung-ho at the beginning, and then how do you just throw that match so easily? Oh my god, it was awful. My quote. There were some good ones this episode, but how about the part where Misty says, "I wouldn't make any more predictions about winning if I were you, Ash. Don't forget, you're up against somebody who's practically a water Pokemon master." And Ash says, "I'm up against a water Pokemon disaster."
Oh, Ash.
Oh.
I will give Ash another quote where he's insulting her. They're talking about fishing. Misty says, "I know it seems boring, but maybe if we're really quiet, maybe it'll only take another hour." And Ash says, "As long as you're quiet, I don't care if we're here for another 2 hours."
Oh.
Burn.
Burn.
My MVP will be Bulbasaur for surviving the onslaught of Poliwhirl's bubbles and being a boss. My LVP will be Pikachu for being in that no-win situation.
Good stuff. Good stuff. And Austin's quote, that really was a burn. That reminds us of our next episode we got coming on here called Hot Matches. And we're not talking about like a Tinder. It's actual matches where people fight. We're not starting fires. We're fighting.
We didn't start the fire. Cyndaquil's flame's not starting in the engines. Okay.
We keep farting. Okay.
Oh my god.
Ready?
Oh shit. I had to point out one thing out.
Ooh, what?
Team Rocket had rice balls, and Jesse referred to them as delicious but not nutritious snack treats.
Snack treats?
Yep, snack treat.
They just can't bring themselves to say it, can they?
Nope.
At least it wasn't a jelly donut.
Or an eclair.
Oh yeah.
Or a popcorn ball.
Oh, popcorn ball.
All right, Austin. 3, 2... 1, go.
The twerps go to seek out some Pokemon trainer who is training her Skarmory, and she only wants to fight fire-type Pokemon. So, of course, Vulpix loses miserably. Now it's time to fight Cyndaquil. Cyndaquil still having problems getting it up. That's okay, because Ash is going to take Cyndaquil for a morning montage of running and training, and they actually do a lot better. And Cyndaquil cuffs it out and can light its flame now, and they beat Skarmory. And
time.
Nikki goes to... Okay.
Where does she go? Ooh, we'll find out.
We'll find out.
The Johto League.
Oh my god. Spoiler alert. All right.
No, she doesn't. We never see her again.
I was going to ask that at the end, but you answered that question for me. We don't even have to worry about it.
All right.
All right. You would think there would be a lot happening in this episode, but really not much happens in this episode, unfortunately. Something interesting. Okay, well, let's just start at the beginning. So the twerps, yes.
He disagrees.
I think this is one of the most important episodes in the entire anime.
Oh my god, all right.
Yep, I got hot takes for hot matches.
Ooh, all right. Well, you'll have more to say than I will, apparently. But first, we have to establish that we are somewhere at this random Pokemon Center somewhere along the way to Goldenrod, because we're not there yet. But they run into this kid who's carrying a Growlithe that's in bad shape. And the kid's like, oh no, there's this really strong trainer that's just hanging out up at the mountain. And I messed with her and she killed my Growlithe and you better watch out. But Ash very untactfully asks if that trainer would be up for another battle while this kid's poor Growlithe is dying in his arms.
Jeez. That's a really dark picture here. Yeah,
it was not Ash's most empathetic moment. How about that?
When does he ever show empathy, though, or care about anyone else?
That's a good question.
Unless he has fame or glory to gain from it, he doesn't care.
No, he certainly doesn't care about this random kid, because he's like, enough about you and your dying dog Pokemon. I need to know where this really strong trainer is so I can go and battle and do better than you, because you're just a pathetic kid. And so that kid's like, all right, well, don't say I didn't warn you. She's hanging up by this mountain area. So where do they go? Well, they go to the mountain area. They come across this girl who's just standing there. And I think she forgot that she was in the anime and not the game because she was just standing there.
Exclamation point appears above her head.
Right. She was soaking in what she just did to that Growlithe. She's like, ah,
God.
Godly, yeah.
I know, reveling in the destruction and death.
Fur's all mangled and it's bald in spots. I mean, this is awful.
Oh, she's staring at the bloodstained patch of grass on the ground that is reminders of her victory. But no, she's standing there just waiting for people to come by because she's basically guarding the only rope bridge for miles around.
Melanie.
Who's the other one that we just had? The crazy girl? The Whooper
Alicia.
Girl. Alicia. Yeah. Whooper Girl. They're all in cahoots together, I
forgot about her already. Whooper Girl.
Whooper Girl with her Whooper preschool.
What if Hardy the Whooper just appeared and started, like, pushing them off the ledge?
Eating the remains of the dead Pokemon.
They come back and he's just eating the Growlithe and the kid's just sitting there crying.
Oh my God.
Hardy's sitting there just like...
But yeah, our soup du jour of the day is this girl. Her name is Mickey.
Hey, Mickey, you're so fun. You're so fun. You make me my... Or whatever. Hey, Mickey.
Yeah. And Brock is like, hey there, beautiful lady. Have you seen this...
Hey, Mickey.
Yes. Hey, Mickey. Have you seen this terrifying trainer that's killing everybody's Pokemon? And she's like, oh, ho-ho, but do I? It's me. Ha-ha. And so she challenges him to a battle, which fortunately or unfortunately, she only wants to battle against people. Well, she's battled all the other types with her Pokemon. And now she is moved on to the final challenge, which is fire type Pokemon. Fun fact, this is the first time we hear the word steel type in the anime. We have seen steel types. We have seen Magnemite and we have seen Scizor. But they don't necessarily explicitly call them steel types.
You forget to mention the part where Mickey steals Brock's heart.
Ah, yeah. She may have stolen his heart, but she's
no, literally,
not...
she steals his heart. Like it. I'm kidding.
Oh, she reaches into his chest and rips it right out.
So we first
like
meet
Polly
her.
Ma.
Brock goes up and says, "Hey, are you the trainer?" Didn't even finish the sentence.
Oh my gosh! Right in the chest. Okay. So she challenges Brock. Fortunately, he has a fire-type Pokemon in which to battle her with. But predictably, Vulpix is no match for this Skarmory because Vulpix doesn't really have any fighting experience at all. I don't even remember the last time we saw it.
It's like a fashion Pokemon. Yeah, it's just designed to like test kibble out on. That's all it's there for.
If y'all like Vulpix, you better appreciate it while it's here.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Vulpix sadly loses to this scary bird thing. She's like, okay, well, does anybody else have any fire-type Pokemon that we can, you know, win against? And Ash is like, ooh, pick me. I have one. Cyndaquil comes out, and like Austin said, Cyndaquil has trouble getting it up. He can't get it going. Fire won't come out of its back. And Ash, I thought we were going to have a Tai and Agumon moment where Ash is like, Cyndaquil, what are you doing? What's wrong with you? Get up. Ah.
Is it going to evolve into Skullquil Lava?
That would be amazing. Warp Digivolve to Hisuian Typhlosion.
Ooh, become a stoner.
You're talking about Digimon. Okay.
Talk about Skull Greymon.
Yes, oh.
Okay, is that like a trend thing in the like 90s, like early 2000s, where it's like, oh, the main boy with the fire adjacent element Pokemon creature, and I gotta just yell at it. Like, I don't... But it's trying its best, but it's getting its ass beat. And before Skarmory can eviscerate it with the Steel Wing, Team Rocket flies in and interrupts. I think that's what happened, right?
Yeah, Black Card's working again.
They outfitted their balloon with some claw machine grabby things and scoop up Skarmory and Cyndaquil in a cage. Skarmory manages to escape very easily, though, and pops a hole in the balloon, but Cyndaquil, they just leave it to fly away.
That was so bullshit. Ash was running after the balloon and the others just like stayed there.
And they stayed there for hours because...
Hours later!
He is running after the balloon... Nobody's making any sort of attempt to help. It's daytime, you know, as evidenced by the blue sky. And then cut to later, hours later, he's still running, noticeably tired. You get the lonely, call, you know, how they have an anime with the bird in the background. And then the sky is orange. So you know It's been hours. And nobody's helped him. Nobody's run after him. Nothing. And Team Rocket's like, damn, he's persistent. Like, he hasn't, like, died of, like, exhaustion yet. He just won't stop.
We're halfway to Kanto by now.
Right?
This proves what I said earlier about him only caring about fame and glory. Maybe he does have, like, a softer side, I guess. Because I give it to him here. He did actually put a hot pursuit on.
I mean, yeah, point for effort and persistence, I suppose. But eventually, I guess, Mickey, whatever her name is, decides, okay, well, this is taking too long. So she sends Skarmory after the balloon, like she could have done hours ago. And it easily pops the balloon again, and we get Cyndaquil back. I think, meanwhile, back at, like, their cabin area, they're eating dinner, and so they ask her, like, oh, what is your methods? Like, do you have any, like, secret training methods for Skarmory? Because, like, I think we need to do a little training, too. She tells Ash, well, all I do is just train alongside the Pokemon, which I feel like we've gotten plenty of examples of this before.
Oh, yeah.
Such as?
AJ.
Oh, okay.
There's Wait. Him.
Well, he was whipping them and yelling at them.
That's true.
He's training with them. He's lifting, too. God, who else was it? Who's like the really jacked Elite
Bruno?
Four? Bruno. Remember, he's like punching rocks with his Pokemon.
I feel like we've had this like lesson before where it's like to truly understand your Pokemon, you have to suffer the same thing as they do. You know, whatever.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we actually just had an episode, not like recently, but there's an episode that is the same thing where Ash trains with his Pokemon.
This isn't a novel concept, but Ash has amnesia, selective amnesia, so I'm not surprised he forgot. So he decides to emulate this and get up really super early at the butt crack of dawn and start training with Cyndaquil. All
right, this is what I was talking about earlier.
Oh, yeah, you had big thoughts.
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck y'all are talking about. Oh. I cannot remember a single episode for this one where Ash specifically devotes time and energy to actually training a Pokemon.
Are we sure? Or maybe I'm conflating, like, later episodes, the timeline. I don't know. Maybe you're right.
I can think of him, like, staying up all night to rub Charizard with the blanket and whatever. Or, like, saving Squirtle from bombs or whatever. But I cannot think of an example before this episode of Ash has a Pokemon. That Pokemon has some sort of, you know, issue or has some sort of problem in which it needs to get better in order to be better at battle prowess. Ash uses various different strategies and tries to fix the problem and work with it as a coach to better its abilities.
Maybe you're right.
Can you think of that ever happening before?
Maybe I'm thinking of later episodes and I'm messing up the sequence of events.
I googled one and there's one episode where he's doing push-ups with Pikachu to get him stronger.
Is that when he learns Iron Tail?
I have no idea. He has like a rock. Yeah, it's Iron Tail. He has a rock on his tail.
Yep.
Was that after this?
That's Advanced Generation.
Oh.
Okay, so.
Listeners, please let me know if I'm forgetting something. I'm going to earmark this episode as the episode where the anime has a distinctive shift into a show about adventures, but also training Pokemon and what Pokemon training actually is and what it entails.
Okay, well, I may stand corrected.
And I kind of view this as like the prototype episode for years and years and years of actual Pokemon training to come.
That must be what I'm thinking. Maybe I am just thinking, oh, this was the catalyst and all the other times that he's trained his Pokemon like this was because of this episode. Okay, Austin. All right. Well, in that case, that makes this very different, very interesting. So yeah, he actually dedicates his time all morning long. Apparently it only takes a couple hours to unravel years of trauma and self-esteem issues, I guess, from Cyndaquil. Because after a few hours, he seems to really get in the groove and Cyndaquil seems to be managing it and getting the hang of this. So they decide to take a break, pick some apples from a tree, and of course, predictably, we have disturbed a local Beedrill nest, and so Cyndaquil has to flamethrower them in order not to get impaled by the Beedrills. Ash returns to the cabin and challenges Mickey to a rematch, and this whole battle sequence was kind of drawn out.
It's easy to say. Yeah.
Yes.
They were filling up time that they had left.
Yeah, I think this is what, probably about 18 minutes, so we have a few minutes to like kill before we end the episode. So yeah, we got a long drawn out battle sequence, which I can't really describe very well. Steel Wing, Cyndaquil takes a Steel Wing. Oh no, oh, Cyndaquil dodge it. Oh, agility. Oh god, you know, Fury Attack. Okay, ah. And then Cyndaquil manages to take two Steel Wings, which apparently is a big deal, And this Skarmory ends up taking like 500 flamethrowers and lives. This thing was a beast. I don't understand.
It's still weak against fire, this generation? Okay.
Cyndaquil is like covered in dirt patches and is like dying on the floor. And Ash is like, get up, Cyndaquil. Can you keep going? Ah, he doesn't have... I don't know. Maybe this was one of those times where he should have been like, I think we need to call it here because you're like dying.
He should have thrown in the towel.
Yeah, he wasn't being a very good trainer. But like you said, Jacob, he's all about winning and pushing his Pokemon to the absolute edge. Cyndaquil gets his second wind at some point and manages to ultimately become victorious. And Mickey declares that she's just got to get better and that she can't just stand here by this bridge for the rest of her life like some NPC. She's got to do something with her life. And so she's like, I think I'm going to take the gym challenge too. And maybe, just maybe... or not, we'll meet in the Johto League.
She then immediately falls off a cliff and dies.
Yeah.
Because we never see her again.
I was going to say, yeah, Austin, I was going to ask that at the end and be like, does she appear as even just like a cameo or something later on in the Johto League? Because I didn't remember. To answer your question, listeners, and mine, no, we never see her again. So
Skarmory turns on her when she tries to cross the bridge and just cuts it.
I'm telling you, it was Melanie. She cut that damn bridge.
I think Jacob's right.
All right, there's a huge-ass bug on my wall I gotta kill. I'll be right back.
What is it? Is it a roach?
Continue on without me.
I don't know. Anyway, MVP, LVP quotes.
Alrighty. Oh, crap, it's Austin's first. Followed by me and then you.
He doesn't have to know.
Okay. Alex, you go ahead and go. Alex would do the... I'll go second.
All right, MVP, I'm gonna give it to...
Oh, God, Austin, he's... What is he doing? He's using his bare hand.
Ew, that's disgusting.
Now he's eating the roach? What's he doing? Oh my God, that's disgusting.
He's letting it crawl all over him.
Okay, so he bit the head off, and then he's feeding the legs to his dog Popcorn? What? All right, continue. I don't want to know. All right.
Oh my God, poor Austin. He's going to listen to this playback and be like, what the fuck?
All right, Austin, you're first for the MVP LVP.
My MVP will be controversial because I'm going to pick Ash.
Mm. That's not bad for this episode.
I thought this was a big turning point. I could very well be wrong.
Mm.
I'm always wrong. LVP will be Mickey. You're not coming back after this episode.
Good for her. She got out of this. She got out of it.
She got out. Quote, Brock says, I wonder what type of Pokemon this trainer uses. That kid didn't say. And Misty says, maybe a grass type or water type or even a fire type. And I'm like, wow, Misty, let's just name all the types. This is a good use of our time. Maybe it's a poison type, or a psychic type, or a flying type, or a normal type, or a ground type. Like, Misty, inane dialogue is this.
They should have let her keep going. They should just let her go.
That's it.
Do you have a quote, or did you already do it?
That was my quote.
Oh, sorry. There's a bug on my wall. I'm delusional. Let me see. Okay, so I'm next. My MVP, I'll give it to Melanie for... making it to where,
oh God,
her traps that make this Mickey girl never come back. Good for you, Melanie. My LVP, I'm going to give it to that kid and his Growlithe, because that thing's just mangled up and, you know, we don't know what happens there, but it's not looking good. And my quote goes to Brock, and when they're climbing up the mountain and he sees Mickey, he goes, I climbed this mountain just to see the peak of perfection.
Mm. Ooh. MVP, I'm going to give it to... steel types, because why not?
just in general,
love a good steel type. Pretty good examples of steel types include Magnemite, Steelix, Skarmory. I'm sure there's others, but I can't think of any. Yeah, so LVP. How about, wait, did anybody?
Misty and Brock for leaving Ash.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I'm going to give it to them because they just let Ash run into the sunset for hours and hours and they didn't even help. They didn't even run after him. They were just like, okay, bye. Quote, I only have the one, but it's where they are eating dinner at the cabin area and Brock says, if you'd come along with us, I'd cook a romantic meal for two every night. And Misty says, big deal. On our budget, that'd be a double cheeseburger.
Sounds fucking good right now, actually.
I know, yeah, I could go for does. A nice cheeseburger. All right, that's it.
That's it. All right. Any more thoughts for this episode or episodes?
No.
Okay, before we mention the next ones, we want to bring this up. This is episode 95 of our podcast, and we are starting the countdown to 100. Woo! Let me see, 100 minus 95 is 5 episodes. So we're almost there. I don't know. Are we going to try to announce a new thing every countdown?
Yes.
Okay, we'll try. We'll give it effort. But for our first, I guess, announcement, episode 101 has a special to kind of celebrate us reaching this peak. It's going to be another fan fiction episode.
All right.
With a twist.
Ooh, a twist.
What's the twist?
Jacob, it was your idea.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Ooh, yeah, what's the twist?
We'll find out.
Yeah.
Oh, we can't spoil it. Okay.
Yeah, to be determined. Everybody just got twisted there. Nobody knew what the twist was.
It was such a twist, I didn't even know.
Yeah, it's coming out of left field. Austin, what's on the menu, though, for next week?
Love Totodile Style.
Love Totodile Style. So back-to-back.
And Foul Play.
Foul Play. Okay.
Don't tell me.
What do you mean, oh no?
Is there a character that's coming back?
A shiny character, yes. Oh, well, who are you talking about?
Oh, I was thinking it was a Casey episode.
Oh, not yet, but soon.
Oh, God.
Okay,
All right, I'm going to close this out here. So we got that to look forward to next week. And as always, we'd like to say thank you all for listening and be sure to leave us a 5-star rating. If you have any questions or comments for the show, be sure to send them to outofthedryingpan@gmail.com. Again, that is outofthedryingpan@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @OutOfDryingPan. Again, our handle is @OutOfDryingPan. And join us next time as this journey continues.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.